I think it was 3 weeks ago, I mentioned that I had just turned 60 in January. I don't know how I would look at being prepared to do what Moses is doing at my age, let alone him being prepared to do this at the age of 80. It just overwhelms me to think and to not be, you know, in that frame of mind. What it does tell me is that their way of life back then, and in God's infinite wisdom, Moses, now this is my perception, that at 80, he was probably more like a 40-year-old. That's my vision that I see in my head. Whatever it was, or however it was, I do know without question that God was behind Moses so that he allowed Moses to be physically fit enough to see this through the next 40 years. It just goes to show that God is capable of accomplishing great things. We are re-emphasized that when Christ is put on this earth. We see that Christ was able to raise individuals from the dead. He was able to heal the sick. He was able to cure individuals of severe diseases, leprosy being one of the diseases. And all of that gives us not only an example of the majesty of God and his capabilities, but it is also supposed to be an inspiration to us to take that next step. It's easy to take a step when everything's hunky-dory, when we're all singing kumbaya around the campfire, holding hands, and everybody's happy. What makes it difficult is when we are heavy laden with challenges, physical ailments, sicknesses, diseases. We've been confronted with the loss of a loved one. We've been in such a situation where perhaps our ability to provide a living for our family has been restricted. We're facing financial difficulties. We're facing spiritual difficulties. Everything that we see God providing Moses in Exodus and following, everything we see God providing us through Jesus Christ in the New Testament is a reformation that if we remain faithful, if we look beyond that than what's just before us, we are to be encouraged. We are to be steadfast. We are to lay our faith in the greatness of God and knowing that whatever the outcome, even if it's bad, our faith is such that to the end, we will remain faithful. Once that physical end, when our salvation is asked of us, we know that our reward in heaven, our name written in the book of life, that gives us the hope to carry on. We see Moses had several moments during this process in which he said, "Oh, wait, you've got the wrong guy. Oh, wait, I'm not strong enough. Oh, wait, these last 40 years being a shepherd, I've kind of lost my ability to be a great speaker and orator. I've kind of come comfortable and complacent in the life that I've got. I really don't want to step out there and be a leader again, and especially doing what you're asking me. When we become Christians, when we take that step to be baptized and come out of water, it's just not a symbolic act that we've done. We have made a commitment to God. We have created a covenant to Him that we will not only take ourselves and develop our Christianity and to be as Christ-like as we can, but as men of our household, we have that responsibility to take care of our families, to teach them, to bring them up in Christianity. And if we go on even further, to be leaders in the church, there are additional responsibilities. And as elders, we're not only responsible for ourselves and our families, we're responsible for the flock. And that's a commitment that we made knowing when we stepped in to those positions. Moses had some reluctance. And I can kind of understand why. But as we see here, in the end, with the help of his older brother, the two of them stepped up to the plate. Now, before we go any further, follow with me. Let's turn our Bibles back to Genesis, because we need to kind of reacquaint ourselves with a particular covenant. So let's turn back. Genesis chapter 15. God's covenant with Abram. Because of this covenant, if we fast forward, this is the direction that we're going. And so it's important that we familiarize ourselves once again with what took place. What do you think, David, at this time? 700 years? Randy? Anybody? Maybe 700 years or so from this time to when they stepped out of to take charge. Anyway, it was a considerable time. It wasn't just 30 years or anything like that. So, starting in chapter 15, it says, "After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward.' But Abram said, 'Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and that the heir of my house is Eliezer's of Damascus?' And Abram said, 'Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir.' And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'This one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir.' Then he brought him outside and said, 'Look up toward the heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them.' And he said to him, 'So shall your descendants be.' And he delivered in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness." This promise was one that was given 1,000 years, was it? Okay. So it was a considerable amount of time that took place prior to Moses stepping out and doing what God wanted him to do in regards to Pharaoh. So 1,000 years. This covenant, the prophecy that was spoken to, is now Moses' responsibility to see it through. God made a promise. Now, this great expanse of time, 1,000 years, what does it tell us about God's sense of urgency? Do you think that when God was talking to Abram, that Abram was thinking, wow, so are we talking 15 years, 20 years? My descendants? I'm sure he's doing the math. He's saying, well, if I eventually do have a child, that child grows up, I'm going to have to live to about 973 years to see this take place. God's timing and our timing, as we can see, are two different things. And sometimes we have to consider that when we make petition to him in prayer for something to happen in our lives. Perhaps we forget sometimes in a world today of instant gratification that we forget the patience of God in direct relation to our own patience. And so what we see here is after this vast period of time, God is now prepared to fulfill his obligation. God is now prepared to step in and do what he said he was going to do. Now, I've written some things down so that I don't get lost here. But let's remember that the number 40, most everybody, as far as biblical scholars, has assigned, again, the three things of it symbolizing trials, it symbolizing a time of testing, a time of judgment. And as we see so clearly, as they've gone through these three different aspects, there's usually some kind of a reward at the end of whatever these events are. Now, maybe not for the bad guys, but at least the people who are faithful. And the one promise of the reward that we see in the New Testament is that reward that Christ gave us when he died on the cross. And that we, if we live accordingly and we've done our best, that we should have a place in heaven. So keep that in mind. So what was this covenant and a promise? God made a covenant with Abram. As we see in verse 13, and he said unto Abram, the seed shall be a stranger in the land. And that he's talking about his offspring that is not theirs and shall serve them, and that they shall afflict them 400 years. As we start and look at what's going to take place when Moses has stepped forward and confronts Pharaoh, that's going to be the oppression of the Egyptians that verse is referring to in Genesis. Genesis 15:14. Let's see here. And also the nation who they serve, I will judge afterward. They shall come out with great possessions. The 10 plagues. The judgment. And in verse 16, but in the fourth generation they shall return here, from the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. The Exodus. So way back in Genesis, when God was talking to Abram, telling him what's going to happen, now we fast forward into Exodus and we actually see it getting ready to take place. In the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, in verse 18. saying, to your descendants I give this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river near the river Euphrates and following. What land is he talking about? Canaan. That's right. So this follows lockstep with what we're getting ready to read about and what God and Abram talked about clear back in Genesis. There will be additional parallels that will be reflected throughout the Old Testament that we will see reflected in the New Testament when it involves Jesus Christ. Isn't it amazing how, as we go through the historical aspect of the Old Testament and look at the new covenant established through Jesus Christ in the New Testament, the parallels, the teachings. In order for us to know what goes on and to understand a lot of the New Testament teachings, to keep it or put it in perspective, ideally we need to go back into the Old Testament and familiarize ourselves with the history and with that which was taught back then, so that we can better understand what we're dealing with in the New Testament and have a better understanding of God, what God requires for us and how we are to live our lives as Christians as well. So as we look at this covenant, God's covenant concerned Abram's offspring, that is, his future children. And I guess when you're talking a time of 1,000 years, I guess God can look at his future children. But isn't it amazing the wisdom of God and the way he does things? The second part is the covenant between God and Abram concerning the land, the occupation of a new land. God fulfilled both his promises, and we're going to read about that. And how, and the way he accomplishes this, if as you read through Exodus and stuff, he didn't just say, okay, I brought you guys out of Egypt, so we're going to take a week before we get to this big Red Sea thing. We're going to walk through it, and then we've got about 4.5 weeks of travel, and then there's this land of milk and honey, and it's probably going to take us about a week to clear out all the bad guys. And then I'm just going to open the door and you guys, here you go. And you have at it. It didn't work like that. And we're going to understand, and we're going to have a little better understanding why. It doesn't work like that in life with us today either. Just because we step out of that water and we're a new babe in Christ, our path doesn't open up full of no bumps and rose petals until our salvation is asked of us. The road's bumpy. Sometimes it's pretty steep. Sometimes there's a blind curve or two. Definitely a lot of potholes and speed bumps. God promised an end result to their journey. I will give you this land of milk and honey. But he didn't say that from this point to this point that it was going to be a walk in the park. How many of you have heard people say, well, I've made it. I've accomplished what I've wanted. And they have said, it wasn't so much getting here, but it was the journey. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes that journey is such that, man, we had a great, wonderful experience. Other times, not so much. Other times, you're just thankful you got here with all your fingers and toes, and it's like, I don't ever want to do that again. I don't ever want to go through that again. Some of the lessons that we learn and that the Israelites learn, that life's going to be pretty tough. But if you stay grounded, if you stay familiar with the Word, if you make it a daily active part of your daily process, you're less likely to forget the grace and the blessing God has said He will give you through Jesus Christ when the times are tough. If we have not been putting our Bible first, if we have not been keeping that first and foremost in our everyday lives, when life throws us a curve, when things get tough, when we're on our knees, if we even made it to that point and we're praying, God, please take this off of my plate. The people who don't know the route to get to that point, to ask God for that kind of help, they get lost in all the busyness and the craziness of the world. They lose focus on the cross. They get mired in all the nastiness and the anguish, and so interfocused on the personal and physical hurt that they're experiencing that you're more likely to forget about God at that time. And that's the time that you need Him the most. So as we see, as the Israelites start their journey, once they got out of exile, once they got through the Red Sea and they saw all of these miraculous events firsthand, how long did it take them before they started grumbling again? Oh my. Days? Weeks? Months? How easily did they forget? Sometimes I look at myself and I go, Todd, if it was that easy for those people to forget who God was when they were right there in His presence, how much easier is it for me today to stumble? How much easier is it for me today to be susceptible, to be drawn away from the cross, for all kinds of different reasons? That's why today, in today's time, it's so much more important for us to stay focused in the Bible. It's so much more important to make this a daily routine. Even if it's just a couple of minutes, to be a reminder of who God is, to be a reminder of God's love, compassion, forgiveness, but also to be a reminder of His holiness, to also be a reminder that He not only is compassionate, but He is a just God as well. And the day that we stand before the book of life, we can't look up and go, sorry, God, I was so busy that I thought I was going to have a little bit more time. Brothers and sisters, it's too late. Our history has already been written. And man, is it a challenge. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. That's the one thing. And I'm going to take advantage of being up here, and I'm going to say, brothers and sisters, that's one of the reasons we're starting these small groups. So that in those times when we are suffering, when we are having trouble, when we are dealing with issues that we may not feel comfortable with sharing with anybody in a room like this. I mean, take a look how far apart we're sitting from each other right now. And I've got good deodorant on, so hopefully that's not why you guys are sitting right back there. But it's so that we can develop a more intimate relationship with each other. So that we can feel more comfortable calling somebody at 9:30 at night and saying, I have just had a really bad day and I need somebody to talk to. Boom. Should be able to flip through any page in that directory and go, okay, I can talk to them without hesitation. And also knowing that whatever we talk about, unless we ask them to share it, it doesn't go anywhere. There's a sense of confidence we have to have with each other as well. The whole idea of going through these periods of time in the Old Testament is so that we can see how other individuals in the Lord's body, under God's supervision, dealt and overcame all of the things that we deal with today. There isn't anything that we deal with in the 21st century that isn't found somewhere in these pages. Has anybody heard or come up with a new sin? I don't think so. Has anybody come up with a new way to offend your neighbor? I don't think so. Has anybody come up with a new way, to say I love you? That might take a little work. That might take a little effort on all of our parts. Because if we don't have that intimate relationship, it's really hard to say I love you and mean it. So as we develop a sense of understanding going through Exodus and seeing how Moses led and taught and disciplined the Israelites before and after God, while they're meeting on the Mount Sinai, we are witnessing a new establishment here in Exodus. That new beginning is reflective to the new beginning when Christ died, to our new beginning when we come out of the water from being baptized. They all run hand in hand. They all reflect God's love and His grace, His compassion. So as we look and see the foundation that is being laid, that is so that we today can be well grounded in our faith. And we can reaffirm to ourselves that what God says is true. And that Jesus Christ is the true Son of God, or Son of God. And we can believe that. So that everything we read in here, we can stand as true.
As you talk about that, it just kind of ran back through my head, and I had to look it up. It's 1 Corinthians 10:2, where it talks about the Israelites being baptized into Moses. It's talking about coming out of the water here.
Yeah. It all is interwoven, yeah. And if we don't understand the emphasis in the New Testament teachings, then we have to go back and read the Old Testament so that we're able to comprehend why this is being said and where the comparisons come from. If you've spent a lot of time reading in the New Testament, but you've, and this is just for conversation's sake, you don't know who Moses is, how are you going to understand what they're telling us? I know there's a lot to take in. You think, man, the Old Testament, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of dedication. It's a lot of involvement. But it's well worth a read. And the thing is, as you develop a self teaching commitment to read, and you get into some of these parts, for instance, Exodus, I have enjoyed this more now than I have ever in the past, reading all of this. To the point where some of it, I look forward to even go back and reread again. Because it's like, man, I never realized I looked at it like that before. And it just starts clicking. And the parallels that it refers to in the New Testament. So as we see, we understand now where God's coming from when he's got Moses and Aaron ready to go. We are starting to see him fulfilling his commitment that he gave back to Abram 1,000 years ago. I don't think there's anybody left alive to carry over in Moses' time to be telling these stories. At this point, folklore, I mean, who knows? I mean, they had yeah, that was, yeah. And if you've ever played that phone telephone game, I imagine there's probably a little bit of embellishing or distortion. So anyway, the generation that had been seen, that had seen the fulfillment, so we're moving on now as we go through this, of the three of these events, and had seen the miracles God performed to bring these events to pass, the 10 plagues, the parting of the sea, etc. Unfortunately, these were the same people that rejected God's promise. When they came up to the land of Canaan, and this is one of the 40s, God sent spies, or Moses sent spies out for 40 days and 40 nights. The 12 came back. 10 of them just completely forgot who they were out there doing reconnaissance for. And they go, "You got to be crazy. Have you seen these guys? They're huge. They've got spears, shields, slings, arrows. Who knows what they've got? There's no way we're going to be able to take the land from these people. Even their dogs are big. You know? There's no way." Out of that 12, you had 2 that remembered who they were doing the reconnaissance for. They remembered what God had promised them. And they said, "We can take this. We've got God behind us." Out of those 12, the 10 individuals who forgot their place, who forgot who their leader was, what happened to them? Huh? Well, those individuals at that point, God killed them. I mean, they were done. God's a just God. He's a jealous God. And if he's anything like my parents, after the first time they said something, you didn't go, "What? Huh?" Because you knew you were in trouble. Because most of the time my hearing was good enough, I didn't misunderstand the first time anyway. This is an example, again, of God fulfilling his promise and being a God of his word. Although they sent spies in the land to verify its beauty and its agricultural capacity, they did not trust God's word enough to believe they could conquer the people that inhabited the land. Because they rejected God's promise, God rejected them from being the ones to fulfill his promise. Now, this is not to say that God's covenant and promises would be unfulfilled, okay? Because he had plans for that. He'd made concessions in seeing this through. His covenant dealt with the children of Abram. So if you look at that lineage. So God would allow the generation that reject his word to die. Where? In the wilderness. That whole generation. And what were the numbers? The lack of trust of God today, is it any less significant than what it was back then? I think what happens in our thinking we have a pretty comfortable life. Especially if we look at second and third world countries. And especially if you look back on the way they lived back in the time of Moses. And I think that comfort breeds complacency. Yeah, I'm a good Christian. I come in, I worship, I participate, I'm actively involved. Occasionally I sin. I ask for forgiveness. And nothing really happens. There are really no true consequences to the sins that we committed in relation to what we see here in the Old Testament. Those events in which you did not do what God said, and there were clear, decisive instructions, sometimes as we see, it was immediate, the consequences. Today, we read about what those consequences are. Today, we understand that if we fall astray, if we somehow don't fulfill the obligations that we've made as a Christian, we know that we will have eternal damnation in hell. But do we truly understand what that means? If you were to roll up your sleeve, turn the oven to 500 degrees, stick your arm in that oven, how long can you leave it in there? Not very long. But yet when you read the description that is provided for us of what hell and damnation is, it should be something that we should literally be afraid of. Okay, I would hope to have left on a little better positive note, but we'll leave that for next week. So thank you all very much, and we will... get ready for the remaining time for our services tonight.